I'm really happy to be here with you all today, and I've heard some great presentations yesterday and this morning about branding. So I think I'm here to sort of sum up, and if you've heard some great examples already, maybe I'm here a little bit today to challenge you. So when you're preparing a presentation that you're going to give in front of nearly 800 people, it can be a little bit intimidating. And you're going to be talking about Coca-Cola, one of the world's major brands, and milk, which is what many of the people in the room produce. So I decided to start by going back to basics and say, where does the concept of branding come from? And it's named after, actually, a cattle brand. The first people in the known world to try to differentiate their products from competitors were Norse livestock breeders. So imagine how intimidating it is to talk about a concept that was invented by the people you're telling it to. Okay, the idea of differentiating our animals, the idea of differentiating them on the basis of quality, was actually invented by our industry. But let's talk a little bit about the concept of what a brand is. And as Kevin said, this is something that I think a lot of people really don't understand, and it's something that has evolved. I mean, it's something that has changed over the course of the way that sales and marketing have developed. So the original sort of old school definition is here, and it's sort of the practice of creating that name, symbol, or design that you associate with your product or company. But that is very much an old-fashioned, and I would say out-of-date definition. I would say that what you're describing there is a logo. Whereas a brand is actually the customer experience. When the customer sees your logo, when the customer sees your product, when the customer sees your sales rep, it is all of the things that they associate with your brand. So for example, if I said to you, what's the McDonald's logo, you would say the Golden Arches. But if I said to you, what's the McDonald's brand, you might come up with some of the words listed here and many more. Okay? You have those automatic associations, those attributes, those personality traits that you associate with that company and with their product. So the question today is, why would we bother? Branding can be an expensive, a time-consuming, and in some cases, an exhausting exercise. So why is it important? These are some of the most powerful brands in the world, and the two main reasons that we look at brands are because we get customer loyalty by doing so, and because we can demand a higher price or volume of business through those brands. Okay? These are well-accepted facts for both consumer and business brands. The other function for those of you who work directly in operations is economies of scale. If you want to have a unique package like a bucket to deliver your food instead of a plate, you could produce thousands, millions, tens of millions of those buckets and have them everywhere from Kentucky to Beijing and save some money on that cost because you have that strong brand. And this one, certainly in my 15 years as a professional marketer, has been the most impactful, and that is the increasing reach of the media. Okay. This is how I learned, and those of you who are my age and older, learned to communicate. And this is how we communicate now. Okay? The speed, the range, the number of people that can get that message is larger. So if you have a different brand message state to state, if you have a different brand message country to country, someone sitting in this room right now could do a Google search and actually blow your brand message out of the water because they could see that difference. Okay? The media allows us that access, and as a brand, we have to be careful of that. And then finally, and my favorite, you know, we used Coke as our example today because it's such a well-known and well-established brand, but it's that equity for new products. So there is equity in brands. You know, brands are worth something. When you hear about companies being bought, this is often one of the major factors that plays into the price that you get. Okay? So Coca-Cola is a great example of this. If they want you to buy Coke Zero, there is a really good chance that you will try it because you know it's a quality product, because you know it's going to be consistent, and because you know they're going to deliver something to you that's tasty. In our industry, where what's new is always perceived as better, we have to have some brand equity so that we can extend those lines and get those same points of parity with our existing brands and with our company message. So in the business-to-consumer world, brands are the express checkout for living their lives at high speed. And the thing is, consumers want brands. Okay? I read a study that said the most stressful aisle in the supermarket is the toothpaste aisle because there's too much choice. Do I want tartar control? Do I want whole mouth clean? Do I want baking soda? You know, I don't know. There are too many choices. We want brands so that we can find the attributes that we want quickly, and consumers really appreciate that. So my question to you today is, are brands critical in the business-to-business market? And I've had it argued many times with me, mostly during budget time, that it's not as critical a brand in the business-to-business market. And one of the studies that I read said that business-to-business companies suffer from what is called a numbing sameness, meaning that they are boring, that they are the same. I would suggest to you that brands are actually critical in the business-to-business world because everyone in the business-to-business world is a consumer. Now, the number one argument, especially in our industry, is I don't need a brand and I don't need money for marketing and advertising because people buy from people, okay? And I think that is absolutely true. I don't think there's any question about it, and I think the next time you're hiring someone who's customer-facing, you should keep it in mind. But the fact is that people have brands. For example, does anybody know who this is?
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, thank you very much. Who's this guy? Oh, who's the techno nerd in the front? This is Tim Cook. He is the new president and CEO of Apple. Who thinks that the Apple brand is going to change significantly since the transition from Steve Jobs to Tim Cook? Okay, I'd say we probably had one person in this room, well, two people because I made this live, who knew who this other guy was. Okay, this Apple brand is associated with this man who is widely considered to be a genius, an innovator, and maybe not the nicest guy in the world. But it's a very powerful brand. He is associated with it. And again, if people are buying from people, people have brands. And we have to remember that connotation as we move forward. So why does brand communication work, especially in business-to-business markets? As I mentioned before, it cuts through the clutter. There are many of you in this room, probably, who are scientists. Some of you are my colleagues. And all of you would tell me, you would swear right down to the ground, that when you make a business decision, you make it based on facts. And data would show that that is not the case. That most of our decisions are still made, in some way on our emotional drivers. And if we're telling ourselves that we don't need brands, if we're telling ourselves that we don't need brands, and we're saying, oh, I do everything based on logic, I do it based on facts, I think we can be fooling ourselves. In Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, he says that you make a decision about something in the first 30 seconds, and then you take every other fact that you hear and assimilate it according to what you've already decided. Okay? It's very challenging in the interview process when you're interviewing someone. So it's something we have to be aware of. Again, brands facilitate the delivery of promise. When something is a known entity, if you go with a company that you know to be about reliable service, the salesperson or the marketing literature or the advertising doesn't have to communicate that to you because you already know it, and it allows you to facilitate that with the deliverer of that service. And then finally, as I mentioned before, those emotional drivers. Absolutely critical. And this is not only about your customers and the end consumer. This is about your internal people. And this is one of my favorite examples, okay? HP, which is a global company on the computer side, paid a marketing company huge amounts of money to come up with a new strategy and a new message. And they came up with this strapline, Invent, okay? And again, tens of millions of dollars, ad campaigns and PR and media and all of this to put this strategy out there, okay? The problem was that their employees were treated very much in a bureaucracy where your job was to stay between the lines, to put your piece into the middle, and do what you're told. And the employees did not feel that this was an appropriate strap line, and HP was not able to communicate this effectively to their customers because their employees didn't buy into it. They weren't passionate about it. And what HP did was it actually engaged the marketing company to come back, and also an HR company to change their entire structure to allow their employees to go from what you see here at the top to what you see here at the bottom, to innovate and to invent and really live that brand to today. And of course, that's been their successful brand now for almost a decade. And there are a lot of those successes. And I just put a few of those to show you. For example, HSBC is a bank. The strapline is business without borders. But you cannot open a personal checking account at this bank. But it's a very well-known bank. They do a lot of international sports sponsorships because they understand the importance of appealing to that consumer even though that's not their customer. General Electric, although they have a lot of consumer products, they also have the majority of what they do is business to business, but they focus on the customer message. And finally, the one I want to give you a few examples about is Boeing. Okay? Boeing makes commercial airplanes. And this is their website. So the first message that you see when you go on their website, this is just from last week, is about zero waste and reduce, reuse, recycle of the environment. Okay, a very emotional, a very consumer-facing message. Okay, the next page is about soccer, which is probably the thing that people in the world get most emotional about. Okay. The next one is about how they support the military. It's about their corporate social responsibility. Here's one where they're opening something, but again, you see the people's faces at the grand opening. But remember, these guys actually sell only to businesses. In fact, what they sell is commercial airplanes, no private jets, and defense, space, and security, which they sell to governments. Okay? These guys don't need a consumer message, you could argue, because they're totally business to business. But as you can see, they've embraced the fact that businesses are people, that they're run by people, and that they need to have that brand message. So I do not accept from those of you in the room today that our message is not relevant because we don't sell direct to the consumer. Because what we do is about as emotional a thing as you can do. And that is, of course, feeding the families of the world. It's incredibly relevant. And if you ask the average person not in our industry, where does my milk come from? They will all say, from the farm. Even though I suppose intellectually that they know it goes to a processor and to a packager and to a distribution center and all of those things, okay? You are seen in their eyes as the provider of that product. And that is a good thing. There is a lot of brand equity in that message. An important point that I want to give you today is that you can also choose the attributes of your brand. You don't have to look at them empirically and say, this is the only thing that we really are different at than our customers, you know, the color of the bag. You can look at the things that you do well and choose a core competency. And this is one of my favorites. What is the Volvo brand? One word.
Safety.
Everywhere in the world. Great brand message. People spend a lot of money to put their kids in these cars for the first time. Okay? What is the safest car in the world? Now, Volvo is a very safe car. Okay? It's not that they're lying. It's not that they're telling half-truths. In fact, they use a lot of empirical data to show that they have a safety and a strong brand. But the fact is, Mercedes has better safety. But Mercedes is a luxury brand. Okay? Nobody puts their child in a Mercedes for the first car. And then again, think about those cars that don't think about safety at all. For example, this brand. Okay? My husband's dream in life is to die at the wheel of a Ferrari. Okay? He does not care if it's safe. That is not the brand attribute that he's looking for. Right? So the message is you need to know who you're targeting and what they care about, and you can look at all of the different things your business is good at and choose that one simple message. It's about how your brand relates to your customers. So how are we doing? I want to look a little bit at our own industry and my international guests. I apologize that these are U.S. examples, but obviously they're the ones I have most experience with. So where are my friends in the red shirts? They were all wearing red shirts last night. It's hard to see up here. We had a whole group of folks here yesterday that had their beef, it's what's for dinner shirts on. And this is actually a very powerful brand message, okay? The implication is, if there's no beef, it's not dinner. The implication is, if you go home and try to serve your family a chicken Caesar salad, they will not be impressed. And this is a great, very simple marketing campaign. But let me tell you what they've done that I think has improved it. They have taken the trend toward eating more protein and getting more lean protein in the diet, and they have made an ad that has a more emotional message. And you can see a couple of those ads here. Discover the power of protein in the land of lean beef. Okay? So they have targeted that audience and they have changed their message appropriately. Hello, Harrison. This is the Got Milk campaign, which is well believed to be one of the most famous marketing campaigns of the current era. And again, they did a really nice job targeting this. So they started by getting celebrities, which is the major trend globally right now, looking at celebrities. But they have a very distinct message. So for men, it's about longevity. It's about still being Han Solo at 66. Okay? It's about body by milk. You're welcome, lady. It's about being an athlete. It's about being fit. Okay? These are very, very distinctly targeted brand messages, and any consumer product that is geared toward men of a certain age has similar messages to this. Okay, it's smart, and it's working. Here's the milk ones, okay? Everyone be careful how you answer this. What are women concerned about? Keeping your weight down is a big thing that women are concerned about. And milk has gotten a little bit of a bad name in that area. Okay, there are a lot of synthetic products available to me, even when I have my coffee in the morning. I don't even know what some of the things are that they're offering me. But you can see a very tailored message here about keeping your weight down. This one, a very family-friendly message. The fact is, that the person who buys the beef or the dairy product most of the time is still a woman. And then finally, this one, which is really about inner and outer beauty. So again, a targeted campaign. Who are these people and what do they care about? And both the beef and the dairy industries here in the US have done a good job. You've also done a good job with what we call line extensions, and that is taking your existing product and taking your existing competency and adding to it. Okay? Number one concern for parents of a young child is, will they eat it? Okay? Is it healthy and will they eat it? And if you look at the number of different products that are on the shelves, the different flavors of milk, and you know, we even have them outside, I heard actually that it's a mad rush to get here in the morning or else all the chocolate milk is gone. And in addition to that, these consumer trends. So 10 years ago, if you went to buy yogurt at the grocery store in the United States, you got this very thin, low-fat, sugar substitute yogurt. Okay? And the trend has changed, and now we're all about protein. And you can see all of the major manufacturers here in the US are going toward a Greek yogurt, which of course is a thicker, more protein-packed, and I would say healthier yogurt. Okay, this is maybe a bold statement. So, my sister has two children, a daughter that she's about to send to college, and a son who has special needs. So to say that she does not have two dimes to rub together is an understatement. Okay? So I went to her house, and I opened the refrigerator, and I found some organic milk. So I said to my sister, oh, you're buying the organic milk, huh? I didn't realize that you cared about that. I didn't realize that you were going to spend your money on that. She said, yeah, you know, it has a longer shelf life. It's fresher. Okay? Is it fresher?
Nope.
It's treated at a higher temperature because it has to come a longer distance because it's not as fresh. But the average consumer sees a longer shelf life and thinks this milk is fresher. The higher temperature processing takes away some of the flavor, it takes away some of the vitamins. But again, are we missing the boat on telling this message? I mean, my sister does not have an extra $2. Now I talked her out of it. But I can't go to every home in America, they won't let me in, to give the message. The good news about organics is that customers want choices. If you have a notepad, write it down. They want choices. They're asking for it, they want differentiation, they want to try new things. This is a global trend. In emerging nations, in China, in India, they're seeing this exact same pattern. So how can we provide those choices? And this is your choice and your challenge today. I fundamentally believe that there will always be a market for an economical everything. And there's no secret that that is going to be true in the dairy industry for a long time. So is that it? Or is it your niche? Okay. I was at the distillery last night. This is the only job in the world where you can say I was at the distillery to be proud. And some of you were there trying our Bluegrass Sundown and saying, well, I prefer, instead of using heavy whipping cream, I use baking milk. I've never heard of baking milk. There's no product that's marketed as milk for baking in the United States. But should there be? There's baking chocolate, special sugar for baking, special sugar substitute for baking. What is the niche that you could find and address and that could bring you that new business? Now, I always advocate with branding a simple message. Choose an attribute, communicate it to your team, be passionate about it, and get the message out there. Okay? But it's not all easy. The implementation, the relentless, ongoing implementation through all of the media channels that you have available is really the challenge here. Okay? And I think we have to step up to that challenge. Whether we decide to use all of these things and the many others that are out there or not, the fact is we need to know what that message is and we need to know what's being said about us. And that is why it's a unique challenge in the age of social media, and particularly in the age of Twitter. Now, I'm fascinated by Twitter, and I have to be, because as I told you, I have a 16-year-old niece, and I can't speak to her unless I do it over social media. So if you have a good customer experience, if you go and you get your coffee in the morning and you have a good experience, you generally tell an average of two people. But if you have a bad customer experience, you usually tell an average of 11 people. Because it's fun to whine about it, talk about it, let everybody know how they got you the wrong coffee again today. In the age of Twitter, if you were to tweet that, it's much easier for you to tell not two people and not 11 people, maybe 3,000 people. or if you're friends with someone or someone picks up your tweet because it's about something that's of interest to them, your message could go viral. It could go to 300,000, 500,000, a million people about your one bad customer experience. I find it a little terrifying, actually. And that is why we have to remember that every point of contact is a moment of truth for your brand. The famous story about the former President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, was that he went to NASA and saw a man mopping the floor. And he said to the man, "Hi there, what are you doing?" And the man said, "I'm helping to put an American on the moon." How do you get that level of engagement from your people? I wish I knew the answer. But the point is, you gotta live it. You gotta be passionate about it. You gotta have people who are those brand ambassadors who could come in and talk to a group and give those values through their very being, through the brand that is those people. And no one does that better than these hooligans. Sports fans are the number one brand people worldwide. I mean, they really, really live the brand. So how do you get your people to do the same thing? I'll leave you with this. I heard a statistic just this week from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association that said that with consumers in the millennial generation, so that's age 31 and below, that they're consuming a lot less steak. And it's not because they're vegetarians. It's because they don't know how to cook it. It's because, and I'm quoting this from the article, they're intimidated by it. They don't eat steak because they don't know how. Now, to me, that is a fantastic opportunity for the people in this room. And finally, when I walked in to give my talk today, Philip, who's running my AV in the back, hi Philip, was standing there with this turned all the way up. He's 26, I asked him on the way in. That's your next audience, and you will survive and you will thrive based on your stories. And that's my challenge to you today.